This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
John Dickinson and Kyle Madsen, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. As it is, we're live and local here for the next 3 hours, 10 to 2. Keeping the conversation moving here. Buster Posey not going to play in 2020. Should the Giants go young? Can the Giants even go young other than at the catcher position with Joey Bart, who hasn't played any more than 22 games at AA? That's the farthest he's gone to this point. But it is one position, at least, Kyle, on the roster where the Giants do have a young prospect that's close enough, I think, during a 60-game pandemic season to give him a shot.
Yeah, let it rip. outside of starting his service time clock, I don't see a downside to this.
Well, and there's another aspect to it too. It's like, why not? I mean, treat this season like it's for him basically like a minor league season or like a practice. Like, let him come up and play and take his lumps. And, you know, the fans, I think, look, there's no fans in the stands, right? So if there's no fans in the stands and you're worried about, you can't be worried about people not coming, you know, if you aren't good, right? Like, I think normally Giants fans would, or the Giants organization would say, well, we're worried about fans not coming. Well, there aren't going to be fans there anyway. So to me, you tear the thing down to the studs as much as you can and use the fact that there aren't going to be anybody in the stands to your advantage. Like, that's the thing that I keep coming back to. How do you use the 60 game season to your advantage? And as I look at the Giants roster now with Buster Posey opting out, but even before, but especially now, it's like, well, just try to use it as a developmental year as much as possible. The unfortunate thing for the Giants, as we talked about a lot in hour one, they just don't have a lot of young players that are ready to come up and play. Joey Bart, though, is the exception.
It's essentially spring training, right? And no team that has a prospect that's almost major league ready has ever said, we don't want to give him spring training at bats because we're afraid it might hurt his confidence. Like, that's just never happened. This is like, put him in. I wish I had something deeper on this to say than that, but the only way it doesn't make sense is contract wise. And I think it was the 650 brought up his service time. That's the only way that it makes any sense to not plug him in, unless they think he's 3 years away from being ready, which they don't.
Well, he's also 23, so he better not be 3 years away.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if he's,
right. But that's my whole thing. It's like, he was going to be up this year eventually anyway. So bring him up. It's as if he was up for the final 60 games. Great.
Well,
put him
and
in.
Here's the other, the timeline of this too with Posey, right? So Buster Posey's got one more year on his contract, $21.4 million in 2021. There's a team option in 2022 at $22 million, which can be declined for $3 million. So the Giants in 2022 have a choice. Opt in on Buster Posey for $22 million or opt out on Buster Posey and pay him $3 million. Right now, that's obviously a no-brainer, opt out for $3 million. Thank mm-hmm. you, Buster, for everything you've brought, the three World Series and all. But the timeline sets up a natural transition if Joey Bart is to be the catcher. You know, let him get a bunch of time without Posey around now. Send him to the minors at the beginning of next year if he shows this year that he can't cut it, and set up a timeline where, let's say, mid-next year, they're both on the roster, and you're transitioning from one to the other. Or, dare I say, maybe Buster Posey, you know, is somebody that finds himself in the trade conversation a year from now with one year left on his deal. And obviously, he would be at a point then where he would, you know, have to approve any kind of a trade. And I would imagine he probably wouldn't want to be traded. But even if he is on the Giants and they're both on the Giants, it's kind of the swan song for Posey, and you're moving Bart in to where you're leading toward the end of 21, and Joey Bart's going to be the you know, if everything works the way the Giants hope it will, Joey Bart's going to be the starting catcher on opening day in 2022.
Right.
And it's going to be a no-brainer good idea.
Yeah, that's the plan, at least, I think. And then you've got, let's in this scenario say Buster Posey's still around, like there are going to be options to get him in the lineup elsewhere. Like if he's still going to be a productive player on any sort of level, and they want to keep him around. So I'm with you in that sense that Joey Bart at maximum should be the starting catcher in 2022. And if you can accelerate his progress by getting him major league at bats this year, and he's going to be a better player than Buster Posey next year, then that's awesome. But you're not going to learn that unless you get him major league at bats this year.
One oddity in this year, which is going to be very strange, and Andrew Baggerly tweeted this out from The Athletic. Zach Cozart, not playing this year. He's going to make $12.6 million because the Giants DFA'd him right as spring training started and before the pandemic. So he gets $12.6 million. Buster Posey will not play and will make no money in 2020.
Oh, that's brutal.
How about that?
That's very rough. The Giants are going to find a way to help him out, right?
First world problems when you've made over $100 million.
He's doing okay.
I mean, he's doing fine. And again, top of the show, I mean, we talked about it. I mean, he and his wife adopting twin girls. This is why he missed three out of the first 10 days of camp. They were born prematurely. They're doing well. They're going to be in the NICU. So he's going to opt out for his safety, his wife's safety, for everybody's safety. Mm-hmm. So it's a no-brainer, really. And, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, guys that have made a lot of money, like money to where they actually don't need any more money. I mean, you know, $100 million or more in their careers, and guys that have won rings. You know, it's sort of the Trevor Ariza, you know, example from the NBA. You know, guys that have won and have family situations. So it's like those are the guys where it's going to be easy for them, you know, to opt out, and every situation is going to be different. But, yeah, I mean, you look at it, and there's just so many strange things in 2020. And, you know, yeah, Zach Cozart getting DFA'd worked out for him before everything started.
Gosh. That's rough. Like I said, the Giants have got to find a way to help Posey out on some level, right? I don't think they're going to leave him hanging entirely.
Well, I mean, I don't know what I don't know what they can do. I mean, I think it. I mean, you're talking in terms of financial compensation.
Yeah.
We don't have to go too far down this road. But
no, I guess I
don't.
I don't think they can
because it would set a precedent for
basically
everybody to do that.
Right. Okay,
and
that's fair.
So it's collectively bargained. I mean, he leaves the money on the table, and that's fine. I mean, again, it's his choice. I think we all hope to work ourselves into a position in our lives to where we can make decisions that aren't completely dictated by money. You know what I mean? And most people will never get an opportunity to do that in their life, right? You're always going to need to make money to survive. But I think, you know, we can all hope to be in positions like that and hope we can work ourselves to be in position. So I don't begrudge that one bit. I mean, it's just, he's in a position to do it. Maybe other guys aren't. Everybody's situation's different.
You know who I, not to change the subject here, but when we were talking about this Giants kind of setup for the next 2, 3, 4 years and what it looks like, I don't envy Farhan or the front office at all. Like, this is such a difficult spot to be in. And
well, that's why they need to rip the Band-Aid off now, because and I apologize for jumping in, but I'll let you continue on this note. Like, I don't think Farhan, and now isn't even the time to acknowledge it, but I don't think Farhan really realizes how irritated the Giants fan base is going to get very, very quickly with it taking too long and not wanting to trust the process. And I just think that impatience is going to hit him with a fury like by the early part of next year once fans are back.
Yeah, and that's where I don't even know how you control that messaging. If people are going to be impatient, they're going to be impatient. And there's no amount of, hey, in 2 years, we've got these six guys are going to be major league ready and we're going to be really good again. Like, the expectation is so high with this team. When you win 3 titles in a 5-year stretch, that sets a precedent for people that a 3 or 4 year drought of being really terrible. Like, if you look at what the Astros did before they became the Astros, I think that's a little bit what the Giants are looking at right now. Like, that sort of stretch where they are just kind of irrelevant on a national baseball scale for 3 or 4 years while they let some of this talent, for lack of a better word, marinate in the minors before they're ready to be competitive at the major league level. I don't know how the Giants spin that.
Well, I think there's a good portion of Giants fans that if they could see their George Springer, they would love to see their George Springer play, even if you're going to lose, 100 games.
Yes.
Like, I do think, and I do think the Giants are in a unique spot, although I don't really think this matters anymore. Like, I understand the discussion of, hey, you've got a certain, like, the Giants fan base is almost, it's almost split in two different ways, right? There's the older fan or the corporate fan that spends a lot of money on tickets, that's used to every game feeling, you know, relevant and like a playoff game and with a full house, and they love Posey and they loved Bumgarner and they love Belt and Crawford and Pence and Panda and all the guys that brought championships to the city, right? They love those guys and they want to see those guys, and they would rather go and see those players than even see a good team or a redeveloping team, right? Like, there's that. And I think the Giants have tried to cater toward the money, right? The money aspect of the fan base.
Right.
I think then you also have the other side of the fan base that at this point, now that it's clear that the run is over, and it's been clear, I think abundantly clear really since the end of 2018, that the run is over. And that's probably, and it was probably clear before that, but I'll be, you know, conservative with that,
sure,
and say, all right,
yeah,
2018, you knew it was over for sure. So I think there's a portion of the fan base that's like, all right, well, the championship days are done. I would like to see young players and a rebuild and the next wave of prospects that are going to be the Posies and the Belts and the Bumgarners and the Lincecums and the Sandovals and the guys that are going to get us back on top. Like, that's so. But now I think the Giants are in a position where they've had the two bases, but the base that was cooler with the young players and the losing, that almost the Twitter base, right? They're not the ones spending the money, but they're the ones complaining on Twitter or calling into radio shows, right?
Yeah.
They're upset about it. The people spending the money would rather have it the other way, so the Giants were more inclined to keep it the other way and go where the money is, right? Now,
sure.
I think the Giants find themselves in a position where the money base isn't going to be there anyway because season tickets are on a decline. And like the one thing that was a harsh reality that we're not going to see this year because of the pandemic, the Giants were going to have some ugly, ugly, ugly crowds at Oracle Park, like crowds that had not been remotely seen before in the history of that ballpark in 20 years. It was going to look on some nights like an A's crowd. Flat out, like there were going to be nights where they would probably announce 23 or 24,000 and it would look like it's about half that.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's super uncommon for, like, I think that's just something that teams have to deal with sometimes in baseball when they're in the midst of a kind of full-blown rebuild like this, where you just got to kind of deal with that. And I think any team that tries to avoid that inevitability when you're in the position the Giants are in are going to set themselves up for failure for a really long time. So maybe this year helps because maybe there's something that... maybe they'll be less inclined to try and draw fans and be competitive, and so they'll give somebody like Joey Bart a chance, or I don't know. I just, if the main concern is not what the roster looks like in two or three years because the team's trying to win championships and the main concern is making sure that the team is at least halfway watchable year in and year out, it's hard to believe they're ever going to be able to build the team the way Farhan probably envisions.
They're going to feel, I mean, I'm going to put it on the table this way. They're going to feel, I think, more like the A's the next couple of years than what Giants fans are used to. And what I mean by that is a lot of random veterans.
Sure.
A lot of guys that you're trying to see stick, you know, the journeyman that, you know, hasn't gotten a chance on another team that comes in and gets his last chance and make something out of it. Think Dickerson, think Yastrzemski. Those could be two guys that are in that boat that could wind up having careers and might not. You know, if Alex Dickerson had a bad and injury plagued 2020 and was out of baseball in 2021, I mean, that would that surprise anybody? I mean, it wouldn't, right?
No, and it wouldn't derail the Giants' future either.
No, it wouldn't. But I think you're going to see more flyers. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to see more flyers on guys like that just to fill out the roster over the course of the next 2 years than I think, you know, the Giants and their fan base has seen in a long time. I guess my overall point was that now you're more inclined now, next year, yes, but especially this year, to me, you're more inclined to do drastic things that can attempt to speed up the look of a rebuild because you're going to be, in essence, so void of fans, comparatively speaking, that it really does, like, you don't have to appease the people that were spending a lot of money because those people just aren't going to be there.
And I think that's good. I think that long-term is better for the Giants than trying to keep a stadium full while they rebuild.
Well, and you know what? They'll be back. If Joey
yes.
Bart is Buster
yes.
Posey, and if, you know, Elliot Ramos is, you know, Acuna Jr. And, like, I mean, if these guys are, you know, great players over the course of the, you know, Hunter Bishop comes up and, wow, this guy's awesome. Like, they'll come back. Like that fan base will come back, and the park will be full again. And
right.
It's
and
just a matter of how you're going to get to that point.
That's the difference between the Giants and the A's. When you say the Giants crowds might look like the A's crowds for the next couple years, great. But guess what? When the Giants are winning 100 games again and the Giants are World Series contenders again, that place is going to be full. The A's can't say that. So I get that there's maybe an initial reaction when you say that to push back on it, because Giants fans fill the stadium far more often than A's fans do. I think you're right, but I think it's natural because the team is going to be really bad, and find me a team that's really bad across any sport that regularly sells out. You can't. So they'll be back. The Giants just have to bite the bullet for a couple years.
Yeah, and I just I just wonder how dramatically different it's going to look, because I still think, like, I think Farhan Zaidi's fine. Like, there's nothing really to evaluate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing to evaluate.
He's had difficult hand dealt.
He made some choices. He chose to hang on to Bumgarner and Will Smith, and in exchange, he got picks. So those picks now are players that will be monitored. He's had a couple of drafts now. Like you referenced earlier, the farm system for the Giants is rocketing up the charts, which is good in terms of talent that can come up and play, and also talent that could be traded for mm-hmm. other talent in other organizations. I think, you know, the acquisitions of Dubon and finding guys like Dickerson and Yastrzemski, like those are all positive signs. I think ultimately, I mean, they're not negative signs. They're positive signs. Like, I'm not one to give a ton of credit for all of that yet. Like, wow, he's doing a great job, but I don't think he's doing a bad job by any stretch. Like, it is a true incomplete. I would just be reluctant if I'm Farhan Zaidi. I'm reluctant to think that if it doesn't look dramatically different a year from now, like I think a year from now, middle of next year, absolutely by the beginning of 22,
mm-hmm.
it's got to look like a rebuild. Like it's got to yeah. look, and it's almost got to look like a rebuild that is, you know, on the curve back up. Like, because I think you could make a case, and again, we're spent a lot of time on curves, right? In 2020,
yeah.
Like, if the Giants were at the top of the curve, I still think they're going down. Like to me, they are still on the downward part of the curve, and they're going to plateau for a little bit. But by 2020, and I think you could say, all right, they're plateauing in 2021. By 22, that curve has got to be going up. And it's got to be a no-brainer that you can see that curve is going up. So I would be a little reluctant if I'm Farhan to just think that the fan base is going to be cool with it being how it's been to this point for the next year and a half.
It's like there's a car rolling down a hill with a rope tied to the back, and Farhan's grabbing that rope and he's trying to slow the car down. And it's going to take a while to get the momentum of the car to stop, and then he's got to start pulling it the other direction. But if we're rolling with that metaphor, he has a hold of the rope and he's trying to slow the car down, which is better than it just continuing to roll downhill. And if you want to call that an A+, because that's what he's done so far, fine. If you want to say that the team's not a World Series contender yet, so you're going to give him an F, fine. But there's just nothing there's not enough there to definitively say whether he's done a good or bad job. I feel like he's doing all the right things though to get the team heading back in the right direction.
All right, he's Kyle Madsen. I'm John Dickinson. We'll wrap up this conversation coming back, and we'll get into the Buster Posey aspect of it again. And we'll get into the Farhan Zaidi aspect of it and just, you know, what to make of his tenure and what it has to look like over the course of the next, let's say, 12 to 18 months to where he's going to have an opportunity to effortlessly, you know, see the fruits of his labor, you know, come to fruition with this team. He's Kyle Madsen. I'm John Dickinson. We'll keep it moving here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Kyle Madsen, 888-957-9570. Live and local here on a Sunday on 95.7 The Game with you until 2 o'clock. Good to be back on the air here as we have been for the last month, live and local, as things continue to open up, Kyle, and we continue to navigate the new normal among a very difficult 2020.
Yeah, I know the phrase new normal has been thrown around a lot since March, but the normal we're trending toward in August, at least sports-wise, is as normal as things have felt in a long time.
And that's a good thing. I mean, that is a good thing.
I have my concerns, but it's not overshadowing my excitement that we're going to have real baseball in 11 days.
It's okay to be excited about it. In my mind, as long as the players are able to be kept safe, there can be concern and yes, hope and worry. But to me, it's a good thing if everybody can, if the NBA can pull it off, if these leagues can pull it off, it's a good thing. It will be a good thing for everybody.
Yep. I agree 100% with that. I don't subscribe to the idea that you either have to be concerned or excited. I think you can be both.
I applaud all of these leagues for giving it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no guarantee that it's going to work, but I give a major hat tip to the NBA and Major League Baseball and the NFL and the NHL and all of the other leagues and sports that are giving it a shot, because that's really all you can do.
I give a little bit less of a hat tip to MLB just because of how badly they botched everything and it could have been like a 100-game season. But, you know, the hat tip is still there. It's
less so
than the other leagues.
Could it have been a 100-game season, though? And we'll wrap up the Buster Posey conversation here in just a second, and I want to get into something that Matt Chapman had to say, which it made me chuckle. It was sort of mean-spirited, but it was also very much true. We'll do that coming up here in about 10 minutes on 95.7 The Game. But, I mean, could it have been more? I'm not sure. I actually think the more that, like, cases and everything have risen and the more concern there is about the pandemic the last couple of weeks, I'm actually sort of the belief that the timeline was needed to get everything in order, even though that wasn't the intent.
You think if they had, like, how so?
Because they were never going to play, like, they were never going to play until December.
Right.
You know, like, they were always going to try to end the season on the normal timeline. So the more time that got, like, I think they could have come back in June or May.
Right.
But would it, I think when you look at the amount of time that it's taken for the NBA to get everything in order and MLB to get everything in order with, and look at the issues they had, like, baseball had with testing.
Yeah.
Like, that first weekend. And I still think you could make a case every other day. Every other day, like, I think you could still have that conversation where it's like every other day, like, and I guess once you start to have a majority of guys testing negative, which obviously they have been, the every other day does work, because the whole thing is, hey, we've got negative tests and then guys are supposed to be doing the right things, so they're going to remain negative. So I get where they're coming from there, but look at the testing issues that Major League Baseball had getting it off the ground. Look at, you know, the NBA in terms of how long logistically it took them to get everything in order and feel comfortable with it just in the landscape of how it related to normal American life, right? Like, I do think there's something to be said for if Major League Baseball had tried to do this at the end of May, it probably wouldn't have worked.
Hmm. Okay.
And now it has a chance.
Okay.
I've changed my tune a little bit on that, admittedly.
Okay. Forget I said 100. I think it could have been more than 60. And I think they botched it pretty badly.
Yeah, I mean,
but I do think it could have been more than 60 games.
It probably could have been 80, maybe even 90. I think 82 is probably the number that, because legitimately the thing could have been agreed to, let's say, by the end of May, June 1st. The ramp up could have been around the 10th or the 11th of June, and they could have been playing maybe last weekend. And that would have allowed them, on a similar schedule format, to play half a season. I do think that's feasible. I think I'm with you on that.
So, like I said, MLB still gets a hat tip, but it's less of one than the other leagues got.
Okay. Fair enough. Let's wrap up the Buster Posey conversation. We talked a lot of Giants here the first couple of hours. The narrative, the conversation, and again, I mentioned this earlier, it's more, I think, Twitter than anything, but the debate about Buster Posey, you know, this decision affecting his legacy, I mean, I think that's nonsense. The one thing, though, that I do want to ask you, because I don't think we've had the conversation, Buster Posey a Hall of Famer? Like, right now, today, Buster Posey a Hall of Famer?
So, I have a caveat for this. Yes, but I'm not certain I would vote for him based on what we've seen from the Hall of Fame and the players they allow in. I know we talked about this a lot on Bonte Steiny and Guru, and Bonte believes that Posey's not going to get in because Thurman Munson and Jorge Posada aren't in. But I think Posey being the face of a team that won three titles and being one of, if not their best position player for those three titles, catching a pitching staff that spearheaded those three titles, he was way too much of a factor, and winning an MVP and like winning, being the best hitting catcher in the league, like for a stretch of years, that kind of stuff matters, I think. And the 2010 to 2014 Giants matter in baseball history. They matter a lot in baseball history, and you can even stretch it out to 2016 if you want. But that team and that core group of players matters, and Buster Posey was the best of that core group of players. And he was a catcher. He was an excellent defensive catcher. He was the best hitting catcher in the league. He won an MVP. He had important postseason moments. Like, he checks all sorts of boxes. I know the career longevity might not be there, and the run of dominance might not be as long as some people want it to be. But I think when it comes down to voters, I think all those things are going to be a factor in Buster Posey getting in over a guy like Jorge Posada, who was not the best player on a bunch of Yankees teams, or a player like Thurman Munson, who, again, was not the best player on a bunch of those Yankees teams.
Yeah, I think that the actual statistical comparison to Thurman Munson is pretty accurate.
Yeah,
I mean, like, they have very similar numbers. I look at Buster Posey and Jorge Posada, and I think, well, Buster Posey was a better player.
I completely agree. Completely
like,
agree.
Like, to me, and like in a no-brainer kind of a way, like I look, like if you just do the whole, first thing that pops into your mind, Hall of Famer or not,
yeah,
and you say Jorge Posada, I say no. You say Thurman Munson, I have to do some research because it's before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I don't like if you're having a conversation in my mind, Buster Posey or Jorge Posada, I'm saying Buster Posey, and it's not even close.
Yeah.
Now, you know, look, Jorge Posada played a long time. I mean, he played a lot longer to get the numbers that he achieved. But, I mean, you look at the rookie of the year, the MVP for Posey. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that hurts Posey is just if he had just had, you know, he was rookie of the year in 2010. He was on pace to have a similar year in 2011 before he got hurt. He was the MVP of the National League in 2012. And then he was, you know, pretty good in 13 and 14 and 15. I think if his 16, 17, and 18, and in particular 17 and 18, or if his 17, 18, and 19, let's say, were more like his 13, 14, and 15, like mm-hmm. not even the MVP level, but or 14, 15, and 16, like if the last 3 years had been more like the previous 3 years, which still weren't even what he was at the peak
mm-hmm.
statistically, I think it would be a no-brainer for everybody. But I think where you have that, it's almost two declines. You have the decline where he went from great player to good player, and then you have the decline where he went from good player to average player, and those declines seemingly happen quickly. And I think that's the only reason, frankly, we're having a conversation, and the fact that, I mean, his career honestly could be over after next year.
That's the one thing. I think when I say I think he's going to get voted in, I think it's because even if they're mediocre years, I think two or three more years is going to be necessary just to kind of hit certain statistical checkpoints with his number of hits and, you know, games played and just kind of overall longevity. But I like I said, I'm not certain. I would, if I had a vote, I'd be doing a ton of research into a bunch of different aspects. So I'm not certain if I would vote for him, but I do think he's going to get it. That's what it comes down to for me. And it's a lot because the way you put it at the top, where when you think of his name, do you think Hall of Famer? And when I think of Buster Posey, I think that.
Yeah, I think it's almost the, it's the, I think there is, there are some that want to, you know, devalue the Giants' championships compared to other championships. And I think part of that is the, you know, it's the, well, Buster Posey doesn't get as much credit because those teams weren't as good. You know what I mean? So it's like, whereas, you know, you look at like Derek Jeter with the Yankees, for example, and look, I'm not making it. I mean, Derek Jeter's a no-brainer Hall of Famer,
right?
But Buster Posey in a lot of ways was the Giants' Derek Jeter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so he would get points for that. And I know, again, I'm not, you know, Derek Jeter or Buster Posey, Derek Jeter, but Buster Posey was the leader of that team and the tone setter of that era of Giants baseball, which won three.
Right. That team, you know? That team historically matters. That's just it. And he was the face of that team. As good as Tim Lincecum was, as good as Madison Bumgarner was, as good as Matt Cain was, and Brian Wilson had his run, and was it Joe Panic in 2014 who had a pretty nice run? Like, there were all these guys who kind of who contributed in large ways, but I really think that Posey is going to go down as the face of that team historically.
How much of whether he gets in or not is who's voting? Because I think I think the old school vote goes in favor of Posey. I think the new school vote, where it's more statistically driven and you got to hit certain markers and it's not the traditional stats, I wonder if that hurts him, you know, when this conversation is actually starting, which is, you know, we're still probably seven or eight years away. From that conversation actually being had. At that point, you know, who is voting for the Hall of Fame? I mean, it has a tendency, and it already has started to trend a little bit younger and a little bit more analytically driven. I wonder if that helps or hurts, because Posey is almost, he's almost a throwback in terms of, like, if we're having the conversation about Buster Posey, Hall of Famer or not, 20 years ago or 25 years ago, I think there's no question he's in.
Yeah, I think that's probably I think that's probably correct. But then when you start talking about new school voters, people are going to look at the position he plays. And they're going to talk about his added value as a defensive player and his added value as a catcher who, you know, who hit as well as he did on top of his defensive value. That stuff, it all matters to newer voters. And I just, I really think there's a lot of ways that he gets it, regardless of how the next couple years play out.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. John Dickinson, Kyle Madsen here on 95.7 The Game. I'll say this to wrap it up. I think if Buster Posey can come back in 21 and have, you know, two more pretty good years, and by pretty good, you know, get back to where he's hitting some doubles and he's hitting over 300 and he hits maybe 10, 12 home runs, I think that could also still salt it away. If he could somehow bounce back and maybe not be done in 21 and maybe go, let's say he goes 21, 22, 23 and maybe plays first base the last couple of years and he's, you know, back to what he was maybe, you know, 15, 16, 17, I think that would also salt it away because then he would have a little bit more of the longevity vote.
From 2015 to 2018, he's an all-star all 4 years. He averaged 151 hits. He was hitting .303, getting on base at a .375 clip. I know the power numbers aren't great. He's .441 slugging percentage, but if he slashes .303, .375, .441 and has 150 hits a year for the next two or three, he's in. And I don't think there's much of a question about it.
Yeah, that would salt it away, and yeah, I don't even absolutely. Think it has to be quite. I don't even think it has to be quite that good to
sure.
be honest.
Yeah, sure. But I think if it is, it's just like a no brainer. He's going to have a 14-year career. He's going to hit 300 or close to it for his career. Like that stuff all matters. He's going to be close to 2,000 hits by that point if he continues to do that. I think last year was a real aberration. From his what he has left in the tank.
All right, so Buster Posey opts out. Will the Giants go young? Not sure they can. Well, it's something that we'll continue to monitor, obviously, as we, my goodness, we're 11 days away from a baseball season and how it will all impact how Farhan Zaidi and Gabe Kapler are viewed. I think 2020 is basically a one-off, so I'm not putting much in any of it, but continuing to... I mean, this is the stuff we're going to be talking about for the next couple of months, assuming that, you know, Major League Baseball and these other sports can get it all locked in. Did you hear what Matt Chapman had to say this week? I you know, everybody's looking for an advantage, right? We talked a lot about that with the Giants. How do the Giants get to a point where they have an advantage for 2020? How did it? Teams look. Everyone wants an advantage. Well, I think Matt Chapman touched on one potential advantage. Let's go ahead and hear from Matt Chapman on this Zoom call with reporters, where he was asked about playing in front of no fans this year.
Have you gotten your mind quite around the fact that you'll be playing in front of no fans, and how is that going to change the Coliseum home field? Advantage?
I think it's going to play to our advantage. A lot of our games are pretty quiet in general. So I think we're used to not having too many fans at the games. So I think other teams coming in and seeing no fans, and it's a big, huge, empty stadium, and it might be a little cold at night. I think it just plays to our advantage. We're used to playing there. We're used to, you know, playing in front of however big or small a crowd is. So I don't think we dig into it too much. And I think it's going to play to our advantage because a lot of other teams have really good home field advantage, you know, especially Houston in that indoor stadium was real loud. So I think for us to have no fans on the road and at home just plays to our advantage.
First, my first reaction to that was, yeah, I agree with him.
Find the line.
I think that's part of, And I know he got some blowback from A's fans, and I know, you know, he was, you know, he was the guy that, you know, was kind of got on A's fans for, you know, needing to come to the games and come to the big games and you know, support this
Shay's
great
right.
young team. He's right about that too. But my initial reaction to this was that's kind of been part of the A's success over the years, is the fact that once, and I personally have related it, Kyle, to part of the reason why the A's do well in the middle of the season and beyond, because I think when you get into the dog days, a lot of good teams come into the Coliseum and they're looking for energy, and it just ain't there. So I think they get more of a flat. I think the A's do get more of a flat game from opponents that come into the Coliseum at certain times.
Yeah, I could see that. And I don't, if you're an A's fan and you're mad at what Matt Chapman said, fix it. And that's just kind of the whole thing is I'm an A's fan. And if you're an A's fan and you're looking at what Matt Chapman said, and then you've been to the Coliseum or you see the Coliseum on TV, you can't hide from this. Attendance is an issue. It's been an issue. It's not a secret. Matt Chapman isn't saying something that people don't already know, that people don't already joke about constantly. Like, they are the butt of every attendance joke in Major League Baseball. And if you're going to be mad at that, it's not his fault. He was saying stuff people already knew. Now, whether that gives the A's an advantage, I think is a little bit more of an interesting conversation. And one that I'm intrigued to see if that actually plays out, because you mentioned the dog days and, you know, you get, a Blue Jays team that's maybe playing 500 ball, but they had to come to the Coliseum and it's hot and it's a Sunday in July and they just want to get out of there. And yeah, maybe they don't bring their best, but we're in a 60 game season where guys have been itching to play. I think everybody's going to bring their best night in and night out. So I'm not sure that advantage is going to necessarily be there for the A's.
Yeah, I think that does have the potential to be offset a little bit. I do think the A's being used to it helps them be comfortable, because it's going to be weird.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's going to be weird, especially for teams that are used to playing in front of full houses with regularity. The other quick thought on it for me was, you know, again, how do you quantify this other than their record in some of these games? And again, it spans beyond 2018 and 2019, so you can't really hold this group accountable for, you
right.
know, sins of the past. But you could also make a case that the A's have played extremely tight in big games at the Coliseum. Like, extremely tight. And I mean playoff games. I mean game fives and wild card games.
Mm-hmm.
And not you know, the Rangers are coming in and there's three games to go and Texas has got to win one to take the division. Like, that's a little different.
Pressure's on the Rangers
You know, that's a little different. I don't mean, you know, that. So, I mean, the A's have won a lot of big games at the Coliseum, and I think the crowd has played a role in a lot of that. But I don't know, in the playoffs, if you're saying the A's get to play some playoff games with no fans and they feel more like games in July, I think there is a potential benefit for that, to be honest. If the A's are feeling in October like it's July or August, I think that can only help, frankly.
Yeah, that's a great point, because they we've seen them time and time again lose those really big games, those really big playoff games, game fives, wild card games like last year. So maybe there is something to that. I just am not sure during the regular season it's gonna be as big of an issue as we think. Now October, that'll be interesting to see. But Chapman has a great point. Like, the A's home field advantage is hey, it's going to be empty and the facilities stink. And now it's going to be really empty. So, my bigger thing there is anybody that had an issue with what he said. He didn't tell a secret.
And that's where I want to steer the conversation coming back here as we're halfway through on a Sunday. It's a blunt truth.
Yes.
He spoke a blunt truth about where things are. And he spoke it in a way that, hey, this could be an advantage for us. So I don't think there was even really necessarily a negative connotation to it. But where I want to take the conversation next is just some other blunt truths, some other things that you think but may not say about some of the Bay Area teams. We will also get into what's going on with the 49ers and Raheem Mostert and his trade request, the latest on Jamal Adams, all of that and much, much more. We're halfway through here. It's John Dickinson and Kyle Madsen on 95.7 The Game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.